from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Greece has a new government. Sunday's elections saw the left opposition party Syriza rise to power on a promise to end the austerity imposed on its people by the EU, European Central Bank, and IMF. We begin with this report from RT's Rory Suchet.
Greeks have voted to reject bitter austerity measures after the left-wing Syriza party swept to victory in the general election. Now, almost all of the votes have now been counted, with Syriza winning by just short of an outright majority. The now former ruling party came in a distant second. And Syriza has pledged to renegotiate Greece's massive debt and put an end to austerity.
The verdict of the Greek people ends, beyond any doubt, the vicious circle of austerity in our country. The verdict of the Greek people, your verdict, annuls today in an indisputable fashion the bailout agreements of austerity and disaster. The verdict of the Greek people renders the Troika a thing of the past for our common European framework.
Syriza stands for the Radical Coalition of the Left. It was formed in 2004 as an umbrella group for the far left. The 40-year-old leader, Alexis Tsipras, will be the first ever unmarried Greek prime minister, living with his college sweetheart for the last two decades. Back then, they were members of the Communist Youth, and the couple even named their youngest son Ernesto after Che Guevara. Now, Tsipras is known for his relaxed attitude. He doesn't like to wear neckties, and he likes to roar around Athens on the back of a motorbike. Let's get the very latest now and speak to RT's Maria Fonoshina, who's standing by for us in the capital. Good morning to you, Maria. Can you give us a broader scope here? This historic win for Syriza, how does it ripple? How does it affect the rest of Europe?
Well, it was Greece's national vote, but Syriza's victory encouraged similar parties and movements in all across Europe. Anti-austerity supporters from badly hit by the economic crisis, southern countries such as Spain, Portugal, Italy, but also from Germany, from Great Britain, came here to show their solidarity with the country's new rulers. And at the same time, this encouraged and inspired Greek population, this unity with the rest of Europe. We have been able to speak to both of them. This is what they have to say.
It's the end of 5 years of social destruction. Now the Greek people have taken the situation into their own hands. That's why we're celebrating.
It can't change in one day, but we hope Syriza will give us democracy, education, and freedom of speech.
Greece, the first country hit by the economic crisis, many say now could become the first country in this anti-austerity domino effect in all across Europe. Well, let's see and wait. Back to you.
All right, RT's Maria Fonoshina there, live in Athens on this historic morning, the day after this massive general election. Thank you very much indeed for that. Well, the historic victory certainly sparking contrasting reactions all across the EU. The British Prime Minister, David Cameron, he's warned that the result will increase in uncertainty in the EU economy. François Hollande, the French president, saying he's ready to cooperate with the new Greek leadership. And the German central bank president has said he hopes the new government will not make promises it cannot keep and that the country cannot afford. In the meantime, the euro has fallen sharply after Syriza's victory. The currency is now at its lowest level against the dollar in more than 11 years. And one former diplomat and ambassador believes the bloc has only been pushing Greece deeper into the crisis instead of doing what Brussels promised it would, and that is helping it to climb out.
What has happened in the last 4 years was that the European Union was destroying the people of one of its member states with the idea of trying to save it. Nothing worked. The country is in a catastrophe, and it can only become better from now on. European Union has long ago left the European people, and it has been a European Union for the European banks. So I'm very happy that we have this change, and hopefully this change will have further repercussions in Europe.
Now, the anti-austerity policies of Syriza found huge support among many Greeks. For many, the last 6 years has been grim. According to UNICEF, the number of children living in poverty has almost doubled. Suicides have soared by 45%. Also, that of drug use has also dramatically increased. And the worst hit, that of the younger population, almost half of Greece's 20-somethings have no job. Now, earlier, we spoke to Professor of Diplomatic History, William Mallinson. He says that despite Syriza's victory, hopes are high, but change will not happen overnight.
Greece's international position has sorely affected the ordinary people. And that's what this is all about. And I think that Syriza understands that. And so it's in a very strong position with Europe. If you look at the structure, the political structure of the country, it, even with a new party in power, which is a better party than the others, you still have the old problem of clientelism. And until they put forward some structural changes, it'll be very difficult to make immediate changes. The changes will be slow. I view the question, however, as positive because it does mean that the Greeks are prepared.
For more on what a leftist government in Greece could mean for both Greece and the European Union in general, we spoke with George Katrugalis, a Syriza member of the European Parliament and law professor, via Skype Monday. Your party won a big victory in the Greek elections yesterday and has formed a government, and a government of against austerity. I'm wondering first if we could start with a description of the condition of the Greek economy and perhaps how you got into the condition that it's in now.
Okay, yeah. Well, the Greek economy and the Greek society has been devastated by the implementation of these austerity measures. Just to give you some numbers, the unemployment is now at 26% of the population. The unemployment of the young is much above 55%. About one-third of the population is below the poverty threshold, as determined by the European Union. There are hundreds of thousands of households without electricity, a kind of humanitarian crisis. And moreover, the economy has shrunk by one quarter during these years of the crisis, which is a record. Not even the economy of the United States has not been reduced in such dramatic way after the 1929 crash. And also the debt, which was supposed to be reduced as a result of these austerity measures, it has been actually increased. It was 128% of our GDP in 2010, and now it is at 175%. So we had a complete failure at all levels, societal, economic, even regarding the strict economic performance of all these measures.
So clearly the austerity measures are not popular among Greek voters. Syriza has ridden basically an anti-austerity message and bringing really the first government of the radical left, if you could use that term, since the 1940s. How do you see, first of all, the making, you know, what steps do you see on the way to reducing austerity going forward now that you have a mandate?
The first thing it is clear to me is that it is not easy to change the mix of economic policy in Greece if we do not have similar changes at the European level. Exactly because the austerity measures is not something specific to the Greek economy. Greece has become the weak link of this agenda, neoliberal agenda, exactly because we had a so dramatic failure of the recipe. But the same recipe is practically applied throughout Europe with less dramatic but equally disappointing results. I think that if one compares the performance of the United States economy and the Eurozone economy, it's clear that the first one is running now, the last trimester, at about 5% of growth, whereas at the Eurozone we have practically stagnation, and we're very close to a deflation similar to the one that costed Japan one lost decade. And moreover, The societal results are similar. We have a kind of dismantlement of the European social state. We have an increased number of people that are in unemployment, and another number that it is employed but at very lowly paid jobs. That's why we have a reaction of the European societies that it does not take always the form of a leftist, reply. In the spectacular rise of the star of Mrs. Le Pen in France is an example of a society that instinctively is looking for the solution at this xenophobic, reactionary positions of Mrs. Le Pen. But what is clear is that it is not anymore possible for the political elite in Europe to continue the same set of policies. That's why we have the hope that Greece could trigger some kind of political domino to be a catalyst for similar changes at the countries of the European South at the beginning, maybe later even at the core countries. And a happy coincidence is that 2015 is a year election for all countries of the South, beginning with Spain.
You know, towards that, first, at the European Parliament, is there a caucus or a grouping of some kind of debtor nations within the EU that are organized specifically because they are debtor nations to IMF, World Bank, ECB?
There was a decision at the last Parliament before the elections of 2014, a resolution of the European Parliament finding that the Troika, as a non-institutionally provided organ, I mean, as an organ that it was not clearly defined by any kind of European legislation, did not play a positive role in the implementation of the austerity programs. So we had a first reaction of the European Parliament, not so much in the sense of criticizing the substance of these policies, but some kind of the formalities they took place. In the new parliament, we had recently, and as a kind of reaction to the victory of Syriza, more, let's say, outspoken criticism against the austerity. For instance, the group of the Social Democrats in the European Parliament, which is the second biggest after the so-called Popular Party, the Conservatives, issued a declaration saying that the victory of Syriza at this elections was a clear message for putting an end to the austerity and also to the diktats of Troika. So we see within the European Parliament a kind of departure from, the official position that considers yet the austerity to be something desirable. I'm not implying that we have a majority now in the European Parliament, far from that, but it is clear that the Social Democrats are trying to hear this reaction of the European societies, exactly because they fear that if they do not, in a way, respond to that, they are going to have this kind of, disastrous future that the socialists in Greece had. The socialists in Greece used to be the dominant party with 48%, the maximum of the votes they have taken at the best elections they had. And now they have only 4%. They have practically been evaporated. So I think there is a kind of hope in Europe because we see a kind of a shift of the balance of powers.
I'm wondering if the political condition that existed in Greece with the Socialist Party before, or even what this election and the last one showed, that the socialist electorate chose essentially the real socialist party, that the social democrats were signing on to austerity, neoliberalism, and late capitalist policies, and that the difference on this particular key issue showed the electorate that, well, actually, we're the socialists, and that's why they were chosen. I'm wondering if that allows you to broadcast a message to the electorates of the social, the voters for social democrats in the other countries of the South, that these are the policies, and if your leaders aren't telling you that, you need new leaders. Maybe convening groups in Athens from the other countries to discuss the agenda going forward, or trying to form a group in the European Parliament of debtor countries and seeing who joins and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm. It would be an idea, yes, of course. And the rise of brother powers of Syriza, like Podemos in Spain, looks that that could be a very possible alternative. There is a different kinds of strategy. For instance, in Portugal, the Social Democrats there have departed from their initial approach to support the austerity policies, and now they are trying to appear as a kind of an alternative. But it is a more basic problem, I think, for the European social democracy, because after the late 90s, has practically seized its raison d'etre when the New Labour and Blair, and after that Schroeder, with his agenda 2010, have practically adopted the essential of the neoliberal agenda. Practically, they have become truly assimilated to the classical conservative parties. And now they pay the price for that. I think now it's a critical moment for the Social Democrats. Either they are going to evaporate, as in Greece, or they must reorient themselves towards a more, let's say, critical leftist version of their policies.
And then looking at the global picture, you know, there is this alternative global structure that's coming into being, maybe centered around the BRICS countries, but you see regional activity in Central and South America and the Caribbean and in Asia and elsewhere. Are there possibilities for Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, looking at that model and perhaps some sort of alliances with some of those countries?
Yes, definitely. I have been in La Paz, in Bolivia, this week, because there was the ceremony for the third term of Evo Morales, and he has invited the leader of our party, Tsipras, who of course could not go because of the elections, and he has sent me. So they regard to Europe, and they hope also that after us it could be Spain, a kind of, let's say, mother country, although of course after the colonialism they did not trust them, but it is still a kind of, let's say, paternal image for them. And they do have hopes, the more radical of these countries like Venezuela's Chavez and now Maduro, or Morales, or even Korea, that we could have, we could help them in this alternative way they try to establish there. And we have also similar feelings towards them. Of course, it is not a kind of direct influence. It's rather a kind of mutual inspiration, that it is not just one way, the liberal way, but there could be also alternative ones.
Going forward, over the next few weeks, as Greece, as Syriza takes the reins of power, what do you see happening in the near term?
Well, I think that we are not going to have something spectacular till July. There was an initial fear, even I consider this possibility, that the most reactionary circles in Germany would like to victimize Greece as a kind of a negative example, negative paradigm to Podemos and others. But it seems that although they have tried to do that by directly influencing the pre-electoral campaign, now they seem to be a minority in Germany and in other countries. And the reason I think it is simple, as we are going to have also elections in the UK and elections, I said before, at the rest of the European South, if they were sending a message that elections are irrelevant, whatever the people is voting, there is just one official economic policy and one cannot deviate from it, that would be a disaster for the elections to come. So my feeling is that they are going to let us at the internal level try to implement our policies. They are going to make difficult the financing of these policies by following the rules of the economic governance that are really asphyxiating. They are not going to negotiate with us the writing off of the debt, but they are not going to preclude it also. So we're going to have a period of uncertainty till July, June, July, but without any kind of very obvious clash, a kind of Cold War in other ways, not a kind of direct confrontation.
And given the history in Greece in the post-war period, is there any concern of the military getting involved if Syriza...
Unfortunately, the last dictatorship has made a coup d'etat impossible in Greece. It's one of the positive steps of our historical evolution. There are some kind of penetration of extreme rightist element, even neo-fascist element, to the police, but not to to the army nowadays. And even with regard to the police, it is not the whole police corps that it is it has been penetrated, but a special forces of the police, especially those that are intervening against demonstrators, etc. One of the first things we're going to make is reorganize the police in order to neutralize the influence of these neo-fascist elements.
Meanwhile, Syriza's victory may be contagious. Spain is also seeing the rise of a leftist party that opposes the neoliberal austerity imposed by the IMF and World Bank. Press TV's Waqar Rizbi has more.
Following the key victory of the Syriza anti-austerity party in Greece, its Spanish twin Podemos is now leading in opinion polls ahead of local elections. A new survey conducted by a Spanish daily shows that the left-wing party is leading public opinion with at least 28% of the vote, while the ruling People's Party is lagging behind with 19%. Podemos, founded by Pablo Iglesias in 2014, is taking root in Spain, where the unemployment rate is nearly 24%. In another development, the president of Andalusia's regional government is set to announce snap elections later today. The late May elections will be held at a time when anti-austerity sentiments are rising nationwide. Spain is one of the European countries that received bailout funds from the IMF and the EU.
Fighting continues in the eastern part of Ukraine, where more than 260 people have reportedly been killed in the past 2 weeks. A rocket landed in civilian areas, including a marketplace on Saturday in Mariupol, killing dozens of people and leaving over 100 injured. Stephanie Kutrix spoke with William Spindler, spokesperson for the UN's High Commissioner on Refugees, about his agency's activities following the deadly attack.
UNHCR has been distributing aid to some of those people who were affected by the attack over the weekend when rocket fire hit the town of Mariupol in eastern Ukraine. We have been distributing plastic sheeting that can be used to repair buildings or to create a makeshift shelter for those whose houses have been destroyed. And we have been giving assistance, including warm clothes, sleeping bags and blankets to those that are mostly in need, including elderly and disabled people, and to hospitals in Mariupol.
Has any group claimed responsibility for the attack?
We don't know. It's not part of our mandate to investigate such attacks, but to help the victims and civilian population.
Despite a lack of evidence demonstrating responsibility for the attack, Jeffrey Feltman of the United States, Undersecretary General and head of the Department of Political Affairs in the UN Secretary General's office, blamed the attack on the forces of the Donetsk People's Republic at an emergency session of the UN Security Council Monday.
On Saturday, 24 January, a barrage of attacks with multi-launch rocket systems hit the city of Mariupol, destroying buildings and impacting a market filled with civilians. Dozens of people lost their lives, including women and children, and over 100 were wounded. The OSCE Special Monitoring Mission reported, based on crater analysis, that the rockets originated from territory controlled by the so-called Donetsk People's Republic.
But the Donetsk Self-Defense Forces denied the charge, saying that it was Ukrainian forces that did the shelling due to a targeting error. We have more from RT's Roman Kosarev, who was in Donetsk late Monday and filed this report.
Earlier in the day, Kiev blamed the anti-government forces for the attack on Mariupol in the eastern part of the city that left dozens of people dead. Anti-government forces called Kiev's accusations a provocation and said they basically did not have a technical capability to do that, as they were stationed at least 40 kilometers away from that place. And the anti-government forces said it was a mistake of a spotter who coordinated the target. Meanwhile, they also say that Kiev bombed the territory, like I said, as a result of completely wrong coordinates. And anti-government forces have launched an offensive at the moment, as it was announced by their leader, Zakharchenko, and the offensive is against Ukrainian military positions outside of the city of Mariupol. Meanwhile, the city itself, the port city, is not about to get stormed. Anti-government forces are also saying that they blame Kiev for the derailment of the peace process here in the east of Ukraine, and it was them who used heavy artillery against civilian territories here in Donetsk, the capital of the self-proclaimed republic. Meanwhile, the city itself, where I am right now, it's in mourning. Flags are flying at half-mast, and that's all for the 15 civilians who were killed as a result of mortar shelling on Thursday, and a memorial service was held in their honor today. Meanwhile, we're still hearing the sounds of artillery here in Donetsk, and that's on the backdrop of the fact that the president of Ukraine, Pyotr Poroshenko, has announced that he's going to be sending more army reserves to this area.
This past weekend, a videotape surfaced that appeared to show Western troops in Mariupol. The video depicted uniformed men fluently speaking English, telling a Russian reporter who asks, "Sir, what is that?" to stop taping him, sparking suggestions that foreign combatants might have been involved in the recent shelling attack on the city.
Stop, stop. My face,
please.
Meanwhile, evidence here in the U.S. that Washington is involved in a new Cold War. Federal prosecutors announced charges against three Russian men alleged to have operated an international spy ring based out of New York City. In a Twitter transmission from the FBI at 2:19 p.m. Eastern Time Monday, FBI New York wrote, quote, "FBI arrests Russian spy in the Bronx who was part of ring attempting to collect economic intelligence and recruit NYC residents," closed quote. Monday marked the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, Poland, by the Red Army of the Soviet Union, freeing the survivors of the network of concentration camps and revealing to the world the depth of the horrors perpetrated there. This is Simon Wiesenthal, the Jewish-Austrian Holocaust survivor who became famous after World War II for his work as a Nazi hunter.
My name is Simon Wiesenthal. From the day I was liberated from concentration camp, I have devoted my life to tracking down those responsible for these crimes. In the fall of 1944, as Adolf Eichmann was asked how he could explain the killing of 6 million Jews before the bar of the world opinion, he answered, 100 dead are a catastrophe, millions of dead are a statistic. Most of us who survived the camps are no longer alive. It's important that we who survive inform people who are too young to know the past from personal knowledge. We must not only remember the dead, we must also explain what happened to them and why. Only in that way can we hope to keep such disaster from ever happening again.
Some lessons, however, appear to be more difficult to learn than others, as this report from RT illustrates.
The world will mark 70 years since the Auschwitz concentration camp in Poland was liberated by Soviet soldiers. But the ceremony will happen amid highly controversial plans to repurpose another Nazi death camp. Local authorities in Germany are putting the Buchenwald barracks back into use to house asylum seekers.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.